Well, good evening, and it's great to see everyone here, and once again, appreciate the opportunity to stand before you and to teach in this section about the life of Christ. And so, again, I trust that, really hope that you will learn as much as I'm learning. Okay, I think first order of business I want to be sure of is on the questions. I don't know what's been handed out, but does everyone have the questions, Life of Christ questions number 5? Is that something that's been handed out? And just check through your notes. If you do not have the one that says number 5 on top, let's go ahead and create an opportunity for that to be handed out. So this is called Life of Christ, questions number 5, and it's going to cover about John's testimony of Jesus and some of those first disciples being called and the miracle in Cana of Galilee. Okay, so what I want to and what I'm prepared to cover tonight is John chapter 2. And if you recall, we were talking about the fact that you have the gospel accounts, the 4 gospel accounts, and you, as we study this and attempt to study it chronologically, that it's going to carry you from one book to the next book to the next, and you're going to be jumping around a little bit. And that's true, but it's as we go through, we don't want to forget the general outline of the life of Christ. Okay? That will help guide us all the way through. And then as we're going through that general outline of the life of Christ, we can start grouping passages, grouping books and chapters with those different periods of the life of Christ. So, last time, Greg took the challenge on the 7 periods of the life of Christ. Is there anyone else that would venture and challenge themselves to give out, call out the 7 periods of the life of Christ? Russell. Very good. Very good. Okay, so, and we have begun, we've started our study in the years of preparation, which would take us as in terms of the age of Jesus. What age would Jesus be in that period of preparation? Okay, so from birth to about 30 years, okay? Very good. So, and then we also talked about the fact that as we get toward the end of the years of preparation, that it seems reasonable that we would put the events of the temptation of Jesus, the baptism of Jesus, potentially at the end of the years of preparation. You know, when does he first begin his ministry? When does he first begin his teachings? And that seems to be after his baptism. And so that makes sense. But you'll notice is if you are looking at and studying from Bob and Sandra Waldron's book that they put the temptations in Jesus' baptism in into the beginning ministry instead of the preparation. That's okay. Now, but all that to say this, that after we get through the accounts of the temptation of Christ, which is found in the different Gospels, we get to a period of time right after that, immediately after that. And those days are all recorded in the book of John. And so now we're spending a little bit of time just in the book of John, because it's chronologically what would have happened after the baptism and temptation of Christ. Okay? So last time when we were together, we talked about Jesus and John teaching in the wilderness and John declaring who Jesus was. And then we have the accounts of John introducing some of his disciples to Jesus and say, "Behold, the Lamb of God." And that would be John, and that would be Peter and Andrew, and then Nathaniel is also part of those groups and those individuals that would come forward. And so we see those enter into the picture at that point. And that brings us to chapter 2. Okay, so in John chapter 2, and what I want to do is read the text together, and then we'll go over a few details. So John chapter 2, beginning at verse 1. On the third day, there was a wedding in Cana of Galilee, and the mother of Jesus was there. Now both Jesus and his disciples were invited to the wedding. And when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, "They have no wine." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, what does your concern have to do with me? My hour has not yet come." His mother said to the servants, "Whatever he says to you, do it." Now, there were set there 6 water pots of stone, according to the manner of purification of the Jews, containing 20 or 30 gallons apiece. And Jesus said to them, "Fill the water pots with water." And they filled them up to the brim. And he said to them, "Draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast." And they took it. And when the master of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and did not know where it came from, but the servants who had drawn the water knew, well, the master of the feast called the bridegroom. And he said to him, "Every man at the beginning sets out the good wine, and when the guests have well drunk, then the inferior. You have kept the good wine until now." This beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. After this, he went down to Capernaum, he, his mother, his brothers, and his disciples, and they did not stay there many days. Okay, so let's pause right there. All right, so this we understand to be the first miracle that we have recorded that Jesus performs. Okay? And as you notice in verse 1, it says, on the third day. Why does it say the third day? Well, it's because in the prior chapter, basically from the time that from the time after the temptation, it starts talking about things on a daily basis. You know, the next day in verse 29 and verse 35, and again the next day. And so now, and then 43, the next, well, in verse chapter 2, it says on the third day. So this is kind of interesting. We've got a very tight group of events here in these few days. Okay, so they're in Cana of Galilee. And I didn't prepare a map at this point, but everyone's familiar with where the Sea of Galilee is. And the site of Cana is not just absolutely known, but one place that I've seen it pinpointed on the map is west of the Sea of Galilee. And that would be, and I guess that would be just generally, not to get picky here, but west, just directly west of Galilee. And that would fit with the wording in, let me see here. Oh, in verse 12, after this wedding is over and they leave Cana and they go to Capernaum. Well, we know where Capernaum is. It's on the northwest shore of Galilee. And it says what? It says, then he went down to Capernaum. So we all understand that when it says down, it means down in elevation. Well, Cana, west of Galilee, would be up in the hill country. So that fits. But specifically, we don't really know. Cana of Galilee. So on the third day, they're at a wedding, and the mother of Jesus was there. And he and his disciples were together. Who would the disciples be? When it says his disciples, who would the? Yeah. And maybe Nathaniel. Okay, at least the ones that have been named to this point that we know of. Okay, and they come to the wedding and they run out of wine. Okay, which this would have been a bit of an embarrassment, a point of an embarrassment, because as you have the bridegroom, in these cases, it would have been his responsibility to make sure that everything was provided for, all the provisions are made, and then here they get through part of the wedding and there's no more wine and nothing left prepared to drink. So Mary mentions to Jesus, you know, we have no wine, and this would be a bit of an alarm. And what are we going to do? So if Mary brings this to Jesus, why would she mention this to Jesus? And I'm just throwing out some. Okay, so she understands he has the power to do it. Yeah, I mean, had he worked any miracles recorded to this point? Nothing that's recorded. But does she understand who he is and what power he may have? I think that's reasonable, yeah. And so she approaches him about, hey, we've run out of wine. And so what is it that, how does Jesus respond? It's not his time yet. How does he address her? Okay, so he says, woman, what have I to do with this? You know, what do I have to do with you in this matter? What does your concern have to do with me? And so there's some point made, and I think it's an interesting point to try to understand how Jesus addresses Mary. He doesn't say, you know, mother. He doesn't call her mother, doesn't call her by name. He says, woman, which I think now, if you read that and you apply our language and our meaning to that, that would seem a little harsh sounding. If we were to use that term, it might be kind of a rude way to address somebody. You know, woman, what have I to do with you? So, but certainly it's not that. Certainly he's not addressing her in any kind of rude way. it rather would be more of a polite way. And I don't know what words it would be now. I mean, would it be ma'am? I don't know. But certainly not any kind of rude thing. However, it might be worth noting that not addressing her in this way and addressing her as woman would be some way of separating the fact that what he's about to do is not because his mother asked him to do something. What he's about to do has a different purpose. And it's that form of address. It seems that it was to help her see that his powers were not there just to do her bidding and just to accomplish these basic things and to provide for whatever might happen to come upon them just circumstantially. And so I think that that makes sense to me, that it would be for that purpose. And I've always had a hard time understanding, you know, what does your concern have to do with me? You know, what does it have to do with me? I've always read it with the wrong connotation, and I don't think that's been correct on my part. Other comments on that? Dear woman, is that what it is? The NIV? Oh, okay. NLT. Okay. Okay.
Certainly didn't mean it disrespectful, but it is a disrespectful word.
Yes. Yes. Yes, sir. Okay. An expression of polite distance. Okay. And that goes to that point. That, you know, just kind of, what is the purpose of this? It's not because of our relationship, mother-son relationship. It's not to meet these basic little needs here. I've got a different reason that I'm about to do this. So it makes sense. Anything else on that? Don't let my own, boy, I would take it this way. Don't let that be the interpretation of it. Use her reaction and her response to it to guide us in understanding the meaning behind it. Bobby, and then...
I just know, I like to learn about all the foods that there was nothing so about Mary.
She, yeah, nothing slow about her, and not offended. Exactly.
But isn't it true in every culture that when children grow into adults, that time period when children are trying to be adults, parents need to understand that their children now are adults. Mm-hmm. They're still children, but now they're grown people. Mm-hmm. And there's a place for that relationship to mature to a different type of relationship. Mm-hmm.
Is this specifically relating to that kind of a, okay, let's define a relationship here? I don't know. But I hear your point, you know, about that. Other comments, questions?
If we notice, if I remember correctly, he never addresses his mother or father. He always has addressed her in some other way.
Because
even when she was at the cross,
exactly. Exactly. And it's in that passage that he also says, woman,
yeah.
In the
one
same way. And I think that's where, you know, that it's, let's see, where am I looking? In verse 11, you know, this beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory. You know, this was the reason, you know, for this being done. Okay. Wes. It is fascinating to think about what's developing in her mind from the time that she was told that she would be with child to hearing all the things that were said of him, and you know, she kept these things in her mind, and you know, she's just thinking through these things and you know, piecing things together is, and this could would certainly be a part of seeing that thought process develop. Okay. All right, so we have the water pots, and how many gallons? 20 to 30 gallons, okay? So 50 gallon drum is 50 gallons, is that correct? Am I right? Is it 55?
55,
all right, thank you. So I probably won't forget that now. All right, but we know about how big that drum is, right? So 20 to 30, okay. Half that size-ish, okay? Just to give you an idea, a visual picture. It's good to develop the visual on that. And so he tells them, fill them to the brim and draw out from it and give it to the master of the feast. Okay? And so, let's see. Filled it to the brim, draw some out now and take it to the master of the feast. So he tastes of this and tastes that it's wine. Has no idea that it came out of pots that were really filled with water initially, so he doesn't know any different. But then, of course, the conversation ensues between him and the bridegroom. Wow, this is good stuff. I mean, you held this out to the very end. Usually it's the opposite, okay? So I think one point that's kind of interesting is that this would have been just prior to the Passover, okay? Prior to the Passover feast. And that would be early spring, and Jesus is producing wine, fresh grape juice, at a time when that was very unattainable and not readily available, at least to have that kind of fresh wine at that time of the year. And so that would have really been a particular note to this master of the feast that, hey, this is different. So it stood out to him for sure. Okay, now, does he ever know exactly what happened and where this came from? Did he ever find out where it came from? Who knows? Don't know. But what, again, was the purpose of this miracle? What was it again? To show his disciples, to show his glory, to show who he was, and to show his disciples. And what was the result? It says in verse 11, and his disciples believed in him. And so absolutely, these beginnings of signs are causing his disciples to really alert. Not that they haven't already seen some things. I mean, think about Nathanael. And, before Jesus even approaches him, he knows about Nathanael. He can't believe that he knows who he is and where he was and what he was doing, and he realizes Jesus's omniscience, and his ability to know everything at every time. So he's already been impressed with this, and they've been impressed with these things already, but this first sign really causes them to believe in him. And I think that's a strong point to take away from all of this, and maybe the point to take away from this event in Cana. Other comments, questions, thoughts about this section? Okay? All right, jump in where you wish. Okay, so now, verse 12, it says again, after this, he went down to Capernaum, and he went down, his mother, his brothers, and his disciples. And they did not stay there many days. So now they've moved over from Cana down to Capernaum, which is on the Sea of Galilee. Stay there a few days. And then, verse 13, now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. So a few days in Capernaum, and then now south, but up to Jerusalem. Okay, so we have the Passover mentioned here, and this is the first time that the Passover is mentioned in the book of John. Okay, and just this is another chronological note that's worth making at this point. Because that's what we're trying to do, right? Is to sort of piece this together in chronological format. So, how long do we usually say that Jesus' ministry was? About 3.5 years, typically. How do we come to that number? How do we make that conclusion? The three Passovers, and they're all mentioned in the book of John. And this is the first mention of it. So John, let's see. So 2 and verse 1, let's see. I didn't write it in my sideline. Where are the other, help me out.
5 and 1.
5 and 1 and 6 and 4. That's right. 5 and 1, 6 and 4. Okay, so that helps us in 11. 12 and verse 1, that's right. Okay, thank you. Okay, so with those things and using those as markers, we come to the 3 years, and then we understand, as we've been talking about, that these events of the baptism of Jesus, the temptation, and these this day, the next day, leading up to this feast, wedding feast in Cana, that's a few months prior to that feast. And so that's where we kind of come up with the 3.5 years, is these events that we've been going over leading up to this. But now we come to the Passover. So let's read this next section together. Now the Passover of the Jews was at hand, verse 13. And Jesus went up to Jerusalem, and he found in the temple those who sold oxen and sheep and doves and the money changers doing business. When he had made a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen and poured out the changers' money and overturned the tables. And he said to those who sold doves, "Take these things away. Do not make my father's house a house of merchandise." Then his disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house has eaten me up." So the Jews answered and said to him, "What sign do you show to us since you do these things?" Jesus answered and said to them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." And then the Jews said, "It has taken 46 years to build this temple, and will you raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking of the temple of his body. Therefore, when he had risen from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this to them, and they believed the scripture and the word which Jesus had said. Okay, so now we turn the events toward Jerusalem. Okay? Now, Passover feast, why would Jesus go to Jerusalem for the Passover? Simple, silly question, maybe.
It's
a Jewish Bible. Jewish
Bible.
Yes. So, faithful Jews would journey to Jerusalem. Anyone know book and chapter, Old Testament book and chapter, that would explain that this is what was to be done? Deuteronomy chapter 14. Okay, so the whole area where it says wherever the Lord chooses, you know, to for His name to be, you go there and you worship each year during this feast. And so that's just a reference point there. Now, so he gets there and he sees what's going on. He sees that there are people there and they are selling oxen and sheep and doves, and there's people that are money changers, okay, exchanging currency and all of that. What was going on? I mean, what's the deal with selling oxen, sheep, and doves? Was that okay? Yes, it was in the right place. So it was okay to do that. And it was really something that was a practical issue, because you had people traveling from great distances. And, you know, if it was something that over that distance, it was difficult to carry their sacrifice, to carry their sheep, or to bring their oxen over this land, it was permitted. And that's what Deuteronomy 14 is teaching, that it was okay for them to sell their animal where they lived and take those monies and come to Jerusalem and to purchase there their offerings and to have their feast and all of that and spend their money there. And don't forget the Levites, by the way. So that's what that passage is teaching, and it's allowing for that. So that really wasn't an issue. And then the people exchanging currency, well, that makes sense too, because people would be coming from areas and regions that may have used a different currency than what was being used in Jerusalem. So those things were going on, but as you say, it was in the wrong place. And that was a concern that Jesus had when he comes in and sees this being done right there in the temple. So he makes a whip of cords and drives them out, okay? Overturns tables, dumping money out, and get these doves out of here, get these things out of here. Don't make my Father's house a house of merchandise, okay? So that would be quite a sight to see Jesus going through here, driving them out. Is it the only time? Is it the first time? I'll say, answering my own question, it's not the first time. It's the first time. It's not the only time, okay? He would do this later in the final week, okay? So a few years later, this is going to happen again. But in a different way. So he drives them out at this point, and it's interesting, his disciples remembered that it was written, zeal for your house has eaten me up. And so a little indication there that his disciples weren't novices, were they? They knew the scripture. They saw this happen and went, oh yeah, I remember it said in, how we have it numbered now, Psalm 69, it says this. Okay, so that shouldn't escape us there. And let's remember that they're Jews, and they know the scripture. That's exactly right. And so the goal would be for us to be intolerant where he's intolerant and tolerant where he's tolerant, you know, and to follow that example closely. Class is over.